reason I hate it, it just seems so, what about these people, right? And then the reason I love it, though, now is not because of thinking about the people who are not elect, but the fact that, if God saved in any other way than sovereignly and perfectly, then I would have no hope. I would never be able to be in the kingdom, ever. If there were for one moment, it was up to me to choose Christ, I would not. And I know that because I'm a wicked person. So it's gracious. Now, what God does with... and I also have to recognize it's totally gracious. It's not because God looked down the corridor of time and said, wow, I want Matt on my team later on because he's going to be really awesome. No, it was, if I said that, then I would have something to boast about over other people. I don't, you know. So that's the good thing about it. Now, the second thing is that word reprobate that's used in that text, people misunderstand what double predestination is. And that this is kind of what that's teaching. Double predestination does not teach that God determines, at least in the Anglican context, does not teach that God determines that he's going to force people not to know or not believe.
Okay.
Right? That's, instead, he takes the whole lump of people who all don't believe because we've chosen not to, because in Adam we all sin, and he's choosing graciously to save some. And he's choosing to let the others go their own way, to have their own will, to do as they please.
Suppress the truth and unrighteousness.
Yeah, right. So he's not stopping them, in other words, from doing what they want. The people who are actually in hell, they don't like hell, don't get me wrong, but they don't want to be in heaven. They don't want to be with God. Okay?
All right. That makes sense.
All right. So.
Because I've actually heard people say that. Like, if I have to give this up, I'd rather not go.
Yeah.
I've heard people say that.
Right. So. And that happens on earth, and so we can assume that it happens in heaven as well. All right, so good. Any other questions about the articles? Anyone have a chance to read and want to have...
I still have not gotten...
Really? I thought I saw your name in the list of email. Okay.
No.
Well, all right. I'm sorry. I will purposefully send them to you, and I apologize. I'm not trying to cut you out of the kingdom. I'm not predestinating you.
Grammar.
Not to...
I agree. So number 10, mm-hmm. I totally agree with the concept, and you also talked about this in one of your podcasts, I'm pretty sure, and I listened to it over and over, and I could not understand preventing.
Okay.
That line, without the grace of God, by Christ preventing us, I totally understand the concept, but I could not make sense of that line. Like,
of the word.
Yeah, I was like...
Of the word or the line?
No, of the line, of how it fits in the sentence. Like,
oh, okay.
Okay, so read the sentence out.
So, wherefore we have no power to do good works, pleasant and acceptable to God. Completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
Without the grace of God, by Christ preventing us.
Going before. Without the grace of God going before us, we couldn't
do
this.
That's what preventing means.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. I know preventing means, sounds like stopping us from doing something, right? That's how we use the word. But in King James English, it meant go before.
Okay.
Venti, I think it's a Latin... Is that Latin for go, Ben?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I caught Latin.
And so going before is the idea there. Your grace goes before you to give you the grace to do those things. So, but that's why we had so much people have been very angry with Anne before for naming her blog Preventing Grace.
Well,
they
would just say what preventing means.
Yeah,
that
right.
That totally makes sense.
One family, I think, left our church because they couldn't understand why we would prevent grace.
Well,
and why.
I also thought of it as, like, we need the Lord to prevent us realizing our fallenness, too. But
yes.
Not quite
we could totally actualize our fallenness if God didn't prevent us in the modern way of it, saying that. Yeah. Okay, but there's the old
one. So that was what I was trying to fit in here, but it just didn't make sense in the context, so thank you.
Absolutely. Any other article questions? Okay, well, today we'll go over the leadership structure. So we'll be kind of focusing on Anglicanism last time. We're going to narrowly focus more on Good Shepherd this morning and some of the ways that we are organized.
Question, are you supposed to record this?
Yes, I am. Thank you for keeping me on my toes. I need that, or I will forget.
Is that going to be like in 34 the traditions of the church? Are you going to be? Is that kind of what you're going to talk about?
I wasn't, but is that, do you have another question about
just
that?
Just one.
Okay.
So it almost sounds like individual churches are kind of autonomous on some things, in that it says ceremonies or rites of the church ordained only by man's authority, so all the appointment. Every particular or national church hath authority to ordain, change, and abolish ceremonies or rites of the church, blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of like an individual thing?
It's not individual, but nation. Like, so the communion is organized around different national churches. So
so it could be different in North America than it is in... Okay.
You'll notice, because you have to do it that way. I mean, it was a pretty well thought out thing. You know, the way we worship here in Binghamton, New York is going to be different than in Nairobi, Kenya.
Right.
And we don't want to violate scripture, but we also don't want to put our own traditions as kind of a straitjacket over over the way they do. Great. All right, the leadership structure. Now, this is going to be an exercise in some maybe remind you a little bit of constitutional checks and balances here, and that's kind of the way most Anglican churches are arranged. I'm not erasing something too important here. You have a check and a balance between the rector, that's me, and the vestry, which is the board of elders. If you come from a Baptist church, maybe a board of elders, a board of deacons, same kind of thing. The rector and the vestry together serve in leadership over the church. The spheres of their authority are distinguished by, let's say the vestry is primarily over the purse, the way we spend money. That involves property issues, although I'm technically still over the property, but they discuss property issues, and any spending that goes on, any spending at all, has to be approved by the vestry. Right now there are 8 people in the vestry, and I chair the vestry, but I tend not to vote unless there's a tie, and then I have a tie-breaking vote for the vestry. I can vote otherwise, but I tend to not do that unless I have to. So I let the vestry kind of hash out how they want to spend money. And I am over what's called the spiritual cure. Everything that has to do with worship, Bible study, preaching, teaching, pastoral care, anything at all in the spiritual realm. Now, I know that, of course, money is in the spiritual realm, but anything at all that's distinctly has to do with pastoral work, I have authority over that. And the vestry can't tell me, you know, what music to play on a Sunday morning. They can't tell me what Bible passages to read. They can't tell me how to preach. I have authority over all that, and I can't tell them how to spend money. Now, of course, you see how the checks and balances work out, I hope, because... I mean, they can't tell me how to preach, but if I start preaching heresy, they can say, guess what? You get paid $0 this month. So they can effectively fire me if I become a heretic or become abusive in some way, then that would be it for me. Yes?
Sorry, I just wanted to correct. It's not Venti, it's Volto.
Ah, okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
I have to go back and look at the etymology of that word.
I was thinking Leah Road. And anyway,
okay, good. Thank you. I appreciate that. All the things pertaining to spiritual life of the church are under my authority and responsibility, and everything of the money having to do with money is under the vestry's authority and responsibility. But there is some overlap. Again, I sit on the vestry, so I can vote, I can have a say, and the vestry, you know, any ministry initiative that I want to take has to have money, usually, so they're going to have some kind of say in what I do, too. So the best way it works together is that both sides kind of have the same idea and goal about what ministry is and are willing to spend money invest resources in that same direction. And that usually is the way it works out at Good Shepherd. We haven't had any major fights in the vestry, except for that one time a long time ago where we had the gay marriage issue, and then we had a nine people on the vestry. I was chairing it, and it came down to a tie-breaking vote whether we would stay in the Episcopal Church or not. So it was crazy. Or join the conservative group within the Episcopal Church is what it was. And we lost a lot of people at that point in time because of that.
Are you elected to the vestry?
Yes, the elections of the vestry. I should write down the positions here. We have two wardens, a senior warden, and junior warden. The word warden comes from an old English word, which means to guard, guardians. So senior and junior warden are all our vestry, are leaders of the lay leaders on the vestry. And then there's the other ones are just called vestry members. And they serve, every vestry member serves for a three-year term. We have two-term limits. So the most a vestry member can serve at a sitting is 6 years. And the reason for that is we had, when I first got here, people who'd been on vestry for, you know, one guy had been there for 30 years. So, wow. So.
I thought I had a bad.
Right. Right. Yeah, he was on the vestry for what?
10 years.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, if you're in that long, I mean, you get, not this guy's a great guy, but you amass lots of power and influence and things don't change, yeah.
Is it too much of getting into the weeds to ask who the vestry members of the church are?
It's not. And if you want to write down their names, I can. It's probably. I meant to have a. You know what I'll do too? I'll write them down, their phone numbers, because you should all know their phone numbers and their, you know, how to contact them, their emails. But our senior warden is Chris Jones. Some of you may know him. Okay, so yeah. His job as a senior warden is, if I were to die, then before we found a new pastor, actually the canons say he would take over both spheres. He would be the spiritual and financial until we find a new pastor. So what he would do is he'd find someone to come preach every Sunday and that kind of thing. But he would technically have responsibility in those two spheres.
Even to administer the sacraments?
No, he would probably have to say we're having morning prayer this Sunday if he couldn't find an Anglican to come and do communion. But he would have authority to say, say a teacher could teach in Sunday school or not, or those kinds of things, he would have authority over, and music and all those kinds of things. But usually, if that does happen, these guys want to get a new guy in pretty soon to do that work. Junior warden is Daryl Dean. You got to be careful with Daryl because he has a twin brother named Don, and they like to play with people by calling one another. So it's Daryl. Dean, if you ask them how to tell them apart, Don will always say that Daryl's the nice one. So I'm not sure what that means, but they've been here for a long time. And if you see two guys that look alike, that's them. Then vestry members, we have Liz Hull, who is playing music today. She's on vestry. We have Chris Emmons, kind of a muscular guy who sits my left-hand side of the sanctuary back there. We had one guy leave, so I think moved away, so I think we have a vacancy. So I don't know if we have a full wave right now. I might just have blank. What else we also have Ben Murphy. He's in charge of mission groups and small groups. We have Anna Dreher. She used to be the head of our education department. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm missing two and my mind is blank. There are two more. I'll get the list, or at least one more. I think we have a vacancy, but there's one more. I'll get the list and send it to you today. And you should have numbers and all kind of thing. And if you have questions about things like how we're spending money or what you should do if you want to give money to something or other, call someone on vestry. I don't know. And I'm pretty bad with money personally, so I'm probably the wrong guy to ask. And I try to make a point of not knowing who gives what. So the list of donors or givers is in the hands of the of the treasurer, who's Liz Cole also. But I don't know. I don't know how much you give. I don't want to know how much you give. I don't make a practice of trying to find that out. Unless, now the one exception to that is if suddenly you're giving and then that goes away, then someone might tell me, hey, so-and-so stopped giving, because it might indicate that you're upset about something and I need to know, just see if I can talk to somebody before they
take off. Is Jason the other member?
No, he's not in the vestry anymore.
Okay.
He was our senior warden, the one who gave the talk about the Capitol campaign. He used to be our senior warden, but he's not on the vestry anymore. Mine is not there. So any questions about the relationship between the two things?
Just real quick, you mentioned the vestry is a lot like the elder board. When we first came into the Anglican Church, it was very confusing. It's nothing like the elder board in the Reformed Episcopal Church.
Okay.
It is literally, it was just business, it was just money, it was... When the personal stuff started coming into it, it was actually something they had to be very clear about to draw that distinction. So I wondered, is this vestry similar, or do you allow for some overlap?
I asked for their advice a lot on, so disciplinary issues. We just recently had one that had to go all the way to the vestry, and so I asked their counsel.
So you do run it more like an elder board?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. They don't have that... Canonically, they don't have that authority.
Well, the situation we're talking about was more like it became the atmosphere, and it was all that was created by a group that were more Presbyterian thinking.
I see.
And so when they left, the remaining and then perpetuated vestry still operating kind of like
they used to bring stuff before the congregation and have like a vote and
I see.
All kinds of weird stuff.
So it almost became
a Presbyterian church. It's weird to me now. Yeah. Then I thought it was normal because that's what I came from. So.
I see.
It
was, okay. So I mean, I think there could be, I mean, if you treat them too much, but if they do become like an elder board, it does begin to blur this line too much. So I've got to be careful. But I do think it's valuable. These are all.
But that's you seeking counsel from them.
Yeah.
That's different.
I want wisdom. Yeah, because they were coming
in. What do you think about this?
A list
that's different than them muscling their way in.
Right.
This is the way it should be directing that towards you. That's,
yeah. So when we've had, there are other cases where we've had, a while back, we had some people who were trying to split the church in half, and so we did get the vestry and me together to put out a statement about what was going on. So there'd be concerted action on certain pastoral matters when it's necessary for the cohesion of the church. But otherwise, yeah, I do seek their advice, and they're very wise. They've helped me not make stupid decisions in the past, so it's been very helpful.
Is Tyler on
that? He's not on vestry. Oh, Tyler is my assistant, and nobody who's paid on our staff can be on vestry, because then you'd be able to vote yourself a raise. I'm on vestry, but when they talk about money, I have to step off and recuse myself. So Tyler used to be on vestry. He stepped off when he was hired.
Okay.
He's my pastoral assistant. He's not ordained. He does plan to go to seminary, but he's not gone yet. And we've taken about two young men so far from the pews who've been coming to church, and we sent them on to seminary, and he's the next one on the docket. Hopefully, though, I'm not letting the bishop talk to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you allowed to just keep him?
I mean, he kind of wants to stay longer and learn more, which is great. I'd rather not have him take off so quickly. It's a big help. So my staff, the vestry hires, if I ask them to hire someone and they agree, they do, but the staff is all under my authority. So the musician, we have a musician on staff, that's Michael. We have my assistant, which is Tyler. We have a secretary and a sextant. Oh, and Anne's also on staff. She does administration and some women's ministry work. So I just put her right here. So musician, assistant, secretary, and a sextant who does the cleaning and stuff around the church. They're all under my authority. If you have a problem with any of these guys, come to me, because I'm the one who answers for all of that. Since I'm in charge of the side of things, if your kids are being taught something in Sunday school that you have a problem with, or anything is taught from an official basis at Good Shepherd that you think is wrong, that's come to me, because I want to hear about that. I don't want that to go on without some attention to it. So we have had that in the past. Any other questions about this?
How often do you meet?
We meet once a month on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's an open meeting. The only reason it would be closed is if there was something confidential that we have to discuss. But otherwise, it's an open meeting and everyone's welcome to attend if you want to. It's super exciting. But if you ever wanted to come and address the vestry about something, if you wanted the church to do something, your parishioners are always welcome to come in and tell us what they'd like to see or something like that. So.
You want to put on the docket, right?
Yeah, let us know in advance. I mean, if you don't have to, we appreciate it if you let us know in advance. We can put it on the agenda. Yes, that thing. So yes. Any other questions about this?
So everyone is voted in the vestry, as well as beyond the vestry.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, everyone's voted. Even the senior warden, the junior warden. The vestry has 3-year terms. And term limited out at 2 terms, okay? So 6 years total. And then they have to at least take a year or two break. They can run again after that, but they have to step off and then someone else serves.
So the congregation votes on the vestry.
The congregation votes on the vestry members. We haven't had a contested vestry election for ages, because it's going to be hard to find people to serve on vestry. But.
Not that it's going to be the case in a pool of resources like we have here, but it was really tight. We had to actually revise our bylaws to shrink down the vestry, which you can do.
Yep.
in our denomination. You said 8 now, but yeah. I don't know if there's that kind of breadth. But also, we were able to elect satellite vestry members if we didn't have enough. So in other words, you could have a local businessman, a lawyer, you could have someone else come in who's just a business minded person who can help be objective and fill a role. Do you have any provisions like that?
We have had the need to for do it. That. Yeah,
you're
yeah.
Seeking advice, spiritual advice, it'd be really difficult to have that.
Well, that's what they see it as purely a business.
Yeah,
financial.
It's a business. Yeah.
Usually, it's if we have a shortage, we haven't had a meeting where we haven't had a quorum. And you just need a majority of the people there to have a meeting. And so we haven't had that problem. Hopefully we won't.
Yeah.
So it's, I can imagine it'd be very difficult. Junior warden and senior warden, they serve 2-year terms. And they term limit after three terms. So both, for total of 6 years in this. And if you're a member of the church, you're welcome to run for vestry.
The way he was on, as long as he was, he went from senior warden to junior warden. I don't know.
It was just vestry member to junior warden, then by default because of the shrinkage to senior warden, and then I get stuck there for a while.
So, is it like if they did that where they went from vestry to senior to junior to vestry? I mean, they could potentially.
If some guy that happens sometimes. So someone can go from here to there and then start all over with their term limits. So that has happened. We don't know quite what to do about that yet. But so you got to be careful, I guess, for someone trying to do this.
Well,
probably.
Depending on the attention, and the intensity of everything going on. So.
Right.
If I remember correctly, the senior has to be confirmed.
The senior warden has to be confirmed Anglican, and I think the junior warden has to at least be an Anglican. The other ones do not need to be Anglican. They need to affirm the Anglican articles, and we believe they don't have to be Anglican though. They're not going to interfere with us doing Anglican stuff.
Do the senior and junior serve different roles, even as junior and senior? They have different job descriptions, per se.
So the senior warden is sometimes called the rector's warden, because he's supposed to have his be my chief advisor in the church. I will lean on him for help, for leadership, and all those kinds of things. And the junior warden is primarily interested in property. He oversees, even though I technically have the final say about property, the junior warden is the guy who is the one who takes care of property issues administratively. So if you have a question about, if you don't think the church is clean, or you see something broken, or you see...
We need to talk to him about weeding.
You would talk to him about weeding, yes. Please do talk to him about weeding.
Well, I was going under somebody else that offered. Right.
Yes, that's good. He would be the guy to go to about that kind of thing. So is that anything else here?
So deacons are next. Are you going to talk about deacons? Do you have deacons?
Deacons are an ordained office, right?
Yeah.
So we wouldn't put the deacons on the vestry. They would be, if we had a deacon, he would be most likely paid and under my authority. So it's an ordained office. So bishops, priests, and deacons.
Because the vestry, it sounds like a deacon board.
In the Baptist church.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Can you explain?
Sure. Acts chapter 6. What are the deacons?
Their servant.
Yeah, the servants.
So
we would understand that probably more in an outreach mission capacity than in an in-reach kind of capacity. So a deacon in an Anglican sense would be going out, running things like the shepherd's bowl that we have, figuring out how we can preach the gospel in the community. Those kinds of things would be a deacon's ordained role. The deacon could preach sometimes, and the only thing a deacon couldn't do as an ordained capacity is celebrate communion. But other than that, he has all
deacon
the...
Deacon is ordained?
Huh?
I thought he's ordained.
Yeah.
Different?
You can't do communion unless you're a presbyter, they say. So Anglicanism teaches. Now that's not... that's because the idea is the most senior... minister would be the one that you have presiding over the community. So when the bishop comes, I don't do it.
Right. No, that makes sense. For some reason, I was thinking, like, if something happened and you needed an ordained person, that a deacon could fill that role.
In some dioceses, they allow what's called deacon's communion, where they take already blessed bread and distribute it during the service. Our bishop doesn't like us to do that because he thinks it's too Catholic. So he stops me from that. It was such a great thing when I'm on vacation. I could have someone do these kinds of things, but I can't anymore.
The passage in Acts, which like I'm familiar with from being a Baptist, like that's everyone's referencing the same passage. But the disciples or the apostles needed deacons mm-hmm. to take care of
the widows.
Feeding the widows. Yeah, which I always assumed was a part of that church, was a part of that local church. So, we needed someone to take care of just the everyday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's probably more than, by this time, I think by Acts chapter 6, there are 30,000 Christians, I think, in Jerusalem. So I don't think there's one, there's probably lots of churches, lots of people meeting, lots of houses involved. So to have six deacons over the whole thing, it would be an administrative thing, but not just in a local church, it would be beyond the local church. And for all those who are coming into the church at the time. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right about that. It was, I guess, technically in reach in
it's
Acts chapter 6.
It's just the way, you grow up understanding something in a certain way based on a certain text, and you don't bother to re-examine it. So that's okay.
Yeah.
Happy to do that.
So I would, within the Anglican context, traditionally deacons are outreach kind of ministers who go out and do mission gospel work. So,
they have to go to seminary?
Yes. To be ordained, you have to go to seminary. Same thing. You might have one year less school, but you still have to go be ordained.
And women can't be deacons?
In our diocese, yes. In some dioceses in the ACNA, no.
This is the right place to just bring up, because this is a place that I still struggle. The sacraments and the blessing, or is there going to be...
I did talk about that last
week.
Yeah,
we're talking about it here.
Just because
one area that I'm always...
Wait, what's the problem? What's the issue?
Oh, you gotta be you can't touch anything, you can't let it fall on the floor, you gotta, feed it to the birds and put it down this certain thing, and make sure you don't spit somewhere that you shouldn't. I don't know, it's just
I would think that would be one that we'd all want to
say. Well, you know what I mean.
Okay.
Everybody's drinking something. No, it's all a little bit... much for me. But I've struggled with a lot of that. So, and that's just the rebellious nature of me. But I've come to terms with a lot of the other stuff and understanding why it is the way it is, and that it's a beautiful thing that we have those things and those rituals and those. But it's been a struggle, and this is one that I have not won yet.
Okay. So for us at Shepherd, and you, there are some more Anglo-Catholic views of communion than we have, but for us, we don't believe the bread changes from bread to anything else.
Right. Yeah.
We don't believe the wine changes.
Right.
Right. And not consubstantiation either. No substantial change in the in the bread or the wine. It remains bread and wine. At communion, you do, however, feed on Christ's body and blood, but you do it spiritually.
But why are we so picky about the blessing then?
What blessing? The
consecration?
Yeah. Like, you can only have certain people consecrate and...
Well,
I
don't think there's any biblical reason why in need a layperson couldn't do that.
Well, I mean, like even a deacon is one of
the model. Right, but the model of the New Testament, I think, is that the presiding, I mean, Jesus presides over communion. Is it the highest ranking, the leader, the one who's responsible for teaching?
Yeah.
Is also responsible for giving communion.
Right, that makes sense to me.
Right, okay, so that's where it comes from. It's not that I'm special magic person with magic shoes, who I'm the only one who can touch this stuff. And do, that's not why, but I am responsible for making sure
that
I don't feed someone communion who, when they're in a state of utter rebellion.
It's
and
a matter of responsibility.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely, I would say.
There's a presumption of the hierarchy still applies, right, even throughout. That's kind of the ruling thing of
exactly.
The Anglican Church, there's the hierarchy.
So then, why do you have to be so particular about which saint you put
I don't know. I don't think we have to do that. I mean, I think some churches do that. But having said that, I don't believe the bread changes, but it's you have to kind of set it apart in a prayer to be used. Right.
It's set apart for a particular purpose.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly.
It's not
special bread. It doesn't become like magic bread, but it does become, hey, you know, we're using this as a way to feed on Christ. Do we just want to chunk it out in the road afterwards?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, and it's not something I didn't, but it was more like, you know, Christine was like, hey, you want to be part of the altar guild? I was like, no, but I'll help you clean it. Like, so that all those rules and rituals and that.
You should
is
know.
To me.
This is Good Shepherd stuff. I'm going to go back before I got here. 30 years, well, I guess the Good Shepherd was founded in 1873, and for 100 of those years, this was an Anglo-Catholic parish.
There you go. That makes sense.
You know
so
what?
Why are there 3 cups up there?
3 cups.
There were a lot of the time I helped Christine clean it.
I don't know about the 3 cups. There's one we use at 8 o'clock service. Maybe that's what it is. So a lot of the things that we do, the kneeling and the getting up, and behind the table, I kneel down, I raise it up. All of that comes from the 100+ years behind me of liturgical tradition.
Sure.
Right? That I came in, and when I came to Good Shepherd, a lot of people didn't know the gospel.
Mm.
I would say the vast majority of people didn't know the gospel. We had 40 people here when I got here, and most of them were over 70. So I came in and thought, you know what, I'm not going to rearrange the furniture and start messing with their liturgical traditions because that will just make everyone angry and they won't listen to me. So why don't I come in and preach the gospel? And I still haven't done that. I don't think I need to because I don't think that...
That makes sense now. Okay.
Right.
And then the last question I had is... candles. What are they for? Is that more of the
Anglo-Catholic
tradition?
It is tradition, but it's symbol. So I think everything that we do has really important symbolism. The candles do symbolize the light of Christ, right? It's a good thing to have it. What is that? You can use symbols really well with kids.
So
the big poncho that I put on, the big poncho I put on before communion. So what is that? Well, the Roman Catholic Church teaches us that it symbolizes the unity of the church. No, it doesn't. I say, whenever anyone asks, I say it represents the imputed righteousness of Jesus Christ through which we can approach the table. Without his covering, I can't be at the heavenly banquet. And so that covering, which is, colorful and all kind of stuff, represents his goodness and his righteousness that he uses to make me able to have access to the Father.
Which goes back to the normative and regulative view that we talk about.
Yeah.
Like all of those things ought to be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They are if you know what they mean.
If you know what they mean.
Yeah.
And once a year I try to make a point of having a class where I go through all the stuff that we do on a Sunday morning and explain what they are. So that'll be upcoming if you have questions about
What do other Anglicans think the vestments are for?
Well, it depends on their background. It depends on their background. Like, so if you asked an Anglo-Catholic, he would probably use the Roman Catholic symbolism, but we use the Reformed symbolism.
So like other Reformed Anglicans would say that if you asked them.
Well, most Reformed Anglicans would have a conniption if they saw me wearing a chasuble.
Because
that's so associated with Roman Catholicism. But since I came here and that was their tradition, I put it on and I had to figure out another way to talk about it. than just talking about just using those symbols in a Roman Catholic way. I wanted to use them in a Reformed way and use them to teach the faith.
So yeah, and if any other Reformed wouldn't have that.
No, you go, you'd find, and I have Reformed friends online who just can't believe that I'm doing all this stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like this is like my first Anglican church.
Right. Yeah. I'm really
learning.
So it's
okay,
just good
but
shepherd
I agree. Stuff. Depends on your theology.
When we split from the Episcopal Church. We were under Nigeria, then Kano East. Can you explain what's going on?
Okay. So, just real quickly, when the Anglican Communion, you know, the Anglican Communion is the result of the British Empire. When England expanded, and so the sun never set on the British Empire, they took the church with them. Right, so they planted a church. They didn't plant the church for Nigerians in Nigeria. They planted the church for expats in Nigeria. But Nigerians started coming, and so over time you had like 38, 39 different expressions of Anglicanism in these different nations where the British Empire had spread. When the British Empire started receding, the churches stayed. They remained, right? And many of them, and most of them, all of them now have leadership from within those nations, not Englishmen, you know, shipped over to Nigeria to lead the now there are Nigerians leading the Nigerian church and Kenyans and all that kind of stuff. The United States Anglican Church was the Episcopal Church until very recently, and it still is, according to Canterbury. But so when the Episcopal Church became apostate, we left the Episcopal Church, and we, being Anglicans, had to have somewhere to go, some kind of authority to be under. So we chose to go under Kenya, which is one of the Orthodox ones, and they gave us shelter for a while until the ACNA, which is our current denomination, the Anglican Church in North America, was formed. We jumped right back in there, and we just happened to be in a diocese that's connected with Nigeria, right? The Diaconate East was planted as a missionary diocese from Nigeria. That's our Nigerian tie. The ACNA is now trying to be its own province, disconnected from the Episcopal Church. Not yet part of the Anglican Communion, and I'm glad about that, because the Anglican Communion is kind of messed up right now. So I'd rather kind of be quarantined from them until they get their house in order.
Looked into the Reformed Episcopal Church?
I have. In fact, when I was first thinking about going to seminary, I was thinking about that. But I decided not to, because at that time the Episcopal Church was still, there was still some, I thought, sparks of hope in the Episcopal Church. And so I went into it, and there turned out to be no sparks of hope. But I did consider it.
No, time. I mean, after, I was thinking after the Episcopal Church kind of went and turned on you guys.
Oh, right.
I was just curious as to, I mean,
well, part of it was at the time, you know, so many things would have had to change about Good Shepherd to go to the Reformed Episcopal Church. A lot of things, and we were already. Well, we, you know, a lot of the, I think that our culture is more or less, you know, just the liturgy itself, I think, is not what you see in most Reformed Episcopal churches. It's more, it's less Catholic, isn't it? And,
no.
It's pretty similar.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Except
wrong.
We did do the...
It's a little more thorough.
These and those. Yeah, a little
Greece.
More thorough. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you have the more modern translation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I still say the in that one.
Yeah, me too. So yeah. I like them.
They're allowed to, they have a contemporary version as well that they're allowed
to use. But we preferred the...
You know, part of it may have been, I mean, I'm trying to go back to the time, and I'm not sure if the question even came up, but we also wanted a lot of, as much continuity as possible when you're leaving when your denomination. You don't want to just, going to Kenya enabled us not to have to apply to any kind of acceptance by some, we just were able to just kind of leave and heal, and then without having to worry about being accepted by another group at that point, so. All right, any other questions about this? Okay, well, one last, we ran out of time, and I have a lot more to say, so maybe we should meet again. I don't know if, we haven't totally run out. How much time do you guys have? Does anyone need to leave by?
They have until 6 o'clock.
Okay, so we'll be here until 6.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're welcome.
I mean, as you know, I can keep talking. I mean, I have no problem doing that. But so let me see. Let me, if you have to leave, let me put it that way. If you have to leave, leave, and I'll keep going for those who don't. And I'll have it recorded if you have to leave, so you can get it on the next thing. So I wanted to talk about our ministry heads, because that's another leadership structure that is, it's kind of unique to Good Shepherd. Under my side of things, the rector's side of things, as Good Shepherd began to grow, I quickly realized I am not an administrator, and I don't know how to. There's a lot of things that need to be done, and I am not good at doing them. So I'm good at preaching and teaching, and that's all I can really do in a given week without losing my mind. So we set up something, a structure called a structure of lay ministers, who we call ministry heads. And these are people who I'm responsible for them. They are overseeing our different categories of ministry. So we have outreach, we have missions, we have mission groups, which is different than missions. We have, let's see, Shepherd's Bowl is one. ACW, the Anglican Church Women. What else we have here? Okay, that's it for right. Oh, education, yeah. And I appoint different lay leaders to head up each one of these ministries. And they meet, the leaders of these ministries meet once every quarter. Tyler is overseeing them for me. So I was like, and then he told me if there's a problem, I need to go and deal with it. He's a much better administrator than I am. He's really good. And so, under outreach would go things like the food truck that we have coming to our church every month. I don't know if you know about that. There's a food truck that comes. Shepherd's Bowl and outreach are kind of connected together. Although they're distinct ministry heads, they work hand in hand because Shepherd's Bowl kind of grew out of the outreach committee. The different events we have the trunk and treat and the summer festival that we have. Those are all under outreach. Kind of community involvement is what outreach does. So if you're interested in any of those things, the outreach leader has just had to leave our church. Used to be Carmen, and so that ministry head is Carmen Swafford-Penna, used to be the head of this. She has now had to leave, so we are without a head there. We're headless for outreach. We're waiting to fill that one. Missions is Bill Fruins. And they do things, they are right now strictly dealing with how we fund our missions. We take 10% of our budget every year and we give it to missions. And if you serve on the missions committee, you help allocate that, you communicate with missionaries, you help them see what they need, and you help the church fulfill those needs. Mission groups are basically our small groups. We call them mission groups because we like them to not just, they get together, they read the Bible, they have fellowship, but we also like them to take part in some outreach event, outreach or mission in the church. Shepherd's Bowl, our mission groups is Ben. He's on Vesper too, Ben Murphy. Shepherd's Bowl is right now Ann, because we had to move someone around. So Ann is now, right now, the Shepherd's Bowl head. We're looking for another head of this. Anglican Church Women, Christine Osgood. Basically, if you come from an Episcopal Church background, you know there used to be something called the ECW, Episcopal Church Women, which basically did all the, they would hold, rummage sales or something like that for money for the church. We don't do that anymore. So what these women mostly concentrate on is visiting sick people, taking communion to them, calling people who were missing, and just kind of in reach, care for people as much as they can. So it's a good group of people. Christine Osgood is the head of that. Education, Anna Dreher is presently the one, but she is handing the reins over. in January to another person. But for right now, it's Anna Dreher.
Do we have a person?
We do, and I can't remember who.
Okay, because I was going to say, Anne isn't taking that one over, too, is she?
No. She has to step back down because she has had a... Anna did this for years. She has to take a break, and it can't be Anne, right?
I know.
She has too much on her plate. So someone will be stepping into that. Just the name is out of my head right now.
Are they going to change things, or do they usually keep things going the same...
What's that?
The education, because I really like what it's doing right now. I really looked into that quite a bit.
They won't be changing any of the curriculum or any of the stuff that's going on. No, they might change how they schedule, people
who
are doing
it.
Yeah, but they won't do the changing of the curriculum because we have that. Yeah, we like it. So the idea here is that these people are also looking for people to help them in their various ministries. And that leads to the kind of the next topic, which we should discuss, is what we expect from members. And in the Episcopal Church, when we were part of the Episcopal Church, I think I told you this, the only expectation was that you were baptized and breathing, and that you'd be a member of the Episcopal Church. And so you typically, in an Episcopal Church, you have membership of I think... We had 40 people come to church on Sunday. I think we had like 200 people listed as members on the rolls. You never saw them. They didn't show up. So when we got out of the Episcopal Church, we decided to revise that. And we created a stronger expectations system for voting members of the church. And the expectations are, first of all, that you agree to our basic statement of faith, the one that I handed out to you, not the Anglican. Agree, assent to statement of faith. And that would, of course, mean that you're a genuine, you at least profess genuine faith in Jesus Christ, you're baptized. If you haven't been baptized yet, baptism would be your entry into membership at Good Shepherd. But if you are baptized and you assent to, we just ask that you assent to our faith statement. Two, that you go to church. All right. So you have to be regularly attending. Now, if you're sick or out of town or on vacation, sure. But if you're in town, you're not sick, come to church. It's good for you. But that is sometimes why this is kind of important when it comes to voting. Because if you have the old Episcopal system, you could have people who show up at Christmas, and then they come to the annual meeting, and they just raise a loud ruckus, and they have all the authority in the world to do that because they're members. So we want to make sure these are actually participating.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For having that in place.
Right. It can be really troublesome.
I know. I didn't realize that came from the Episcopal side of things. That was the weirdest aspect. And people would come in and... It was just the strangest part of a Reformed Episcopal Church to me.
It shouldn't be that way. If you're not a part of the body regularly, you shouldn't have any kind of authority to say anything about how the body works. So go to church unless you're sick or out of town. We would expect that from members. Then the next expectation is, let me get this up. I should have this in my mind, but I'm, at the end of the day, my mind is almost blank here. Okay, so... Discipleship and service. Now, I have to say, if you're coming from, Scranton, then there's a lot less expectations on serving and going to various Bible studies during the week because you come from, Scranton. We used to have people from Montrose. We still have some people from Montrose, and we don't expect of them the same kind of time commitment that we would expect from members here. So, but in general, we'd say, okay, you're doing something in the church to increase your knowledge of and love of Jesus. So that could be going to a Bible study. Bible study.
But I will say that I love the fact that you record things and put them, because I'm able to go to the Tuesday Bible study, even though I'm
not. Yes, that counts, right.
It's really, it's really good.
Right, I'm glad.
It's very, very much appreciated. I know it's extra work.
I recorded on my phone. That's why the recording is so bad half the time. I live stream from my phone. But we have three Bible studies that I teach. There's one on Tuesday morning. There's one on Thursday evening, and there's one on Friday morning for men at 6:30 a.m. If you're interested in all those, they're on the website. We have four mission groups going, which are small group Bible studies based on the text that we read for the sermon. Not my sermon, but based on the text that we read. So you have the addresses for those mission groups and the times they meet in your bulletin, usually every Sunday. And then Christian education. So that's what we have going on at Sunday morning. Of these Christian education is the only one that isn't an active Bible study. We use the Bible. We're not actually going through books usually. Sometimes we do, but we tend to use it for more apologetic and topical discussions of theology and things like that. Discipleship now, this is new. This is new for the last 2 years. We ask that you're engaged in one of these things, either remotely or in person, before you can serve in a ministry. And the reason why we've done that is because in the past we had people who were serving in ministries. They had people who loved to serve in the Shepherd's Bowl, for example, but they had no idea why they were doing it. I think I told you the story. They came, why are you serving here? Well, I just really love, it makes me feel good, and we're good people, and nothing about Jesus. And this person who said that didn't want to know anything about Jesus. This person was very, just thought of it as a good work, as earning his or her way into God's good graces. So we ask that you take part in some kind of discipleship in order to serve. That is burdensome, I understand. It can be burdensome. So if you can't do one of these, I would suggest you just do discipleship. Like if one of these has to go, we would much rather have you learn about Jesus than do a lot of work. But if you can do both, great. Service can be anything from serving as an usher on Sunday morning, be a reader, help out at Shepherd's Bowl once a month. There's a lot of different ministries. I think I'm going to send you out something I've written up about the different ministries you can participate in. If you know how to teach, we're always looking for Sunday school teachers and at least substitutes for that. There's all kinds of ways you can help count money at the end of after the service, all kinds of ways you can help. And we do need help, but we ask that it be informed help. So, questions about this so far? All right, fourth is giving. We ask that you either tithe or work toward a tithe, but again, that's not something I ever look at. So if you agree to give, then that's something between you and God, and I don't check it up. The only one I check up is whether you're coming to church or doing Bible study, but I never check on how much you give. But that is something you just privately want to commit to between you and God. And I think that is the last one. Any questions about these? Oh no, there's one more, and this also is new. Communication. Okay, one thing. Yes, see, one thing that we beg of new members and existing members is that if you have a problem with me, something I've said, something I've done, or with Tyler or with anyone on staff or anyone on Vestry or anything that we're doing, please don't just say and take off. I mean, I understand if you have to go, sometimes it happens, but we would ask that you make every effort to figure out or to at least tell us so that we can either rectify the problem or say, look, we can't change this, but at least give us an opportunity to hear the feedback and then see if it can be rectified. Which we're trying to create people, a community that engages with one another rather than runs away when things get difficult. So please do be willing to communicate. That's not just with us, but if you have a problem with someone in the pews, that's why we have the peace there. It's a good time to tell someone, hey, let's talk, or let's get together during the week and work something out. So please communicate when you have issues or you're offended or you're upset about something. Let us know. Okay. Anything, questions or... Yep. Okay, good. We're done for today. I'll send out the email with all the ways you can, all the things you can do at Good Shepherd. And then if you would like to be a member, you can just shoot me back an email from the new member courses and let me know. And then probably be a few Sundays from now, we'll pray over you guys and welcome you as members. So if you're interested, yeah.
This only applies to us, but maybe I should take it privately, but anyway. I feel like in some ways that was the one unresolved thing from our last church, is you couldn't communicate what we needed to communicate, even if how hard we tried.
Mm.
And so is it something that when we decide to become a new member, is it something that we could maybe have you meet with us and talk about that, and then
absolutely,
go to our pastor and explain? Is it worth it?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I don't know.
I'm sorry. He's looking at me like, why are you doing this to me?
Oh,
or did we do this already? I'm missing a piece. I'm sorry. Anyway, no, just, you're not sure what? Sorry, I should have asked this before.
That's all right. No, that's
okay.
All right.
Well, anyway, regardless, I maybe the email that you sent, you feel like there was a closure there. I haven't, like, I didn't feel like I had any closure that way, because in a lot of ways, we just sort of left and faded. So I don't know. You guys can talk about that, and if he doesn't feel like it's necessary, then I shall acquiesce.
If you want to talk it out, it's fine with me. But you know, part of this is we promise to listen too. So if you know, we don't want to be defensive, and you know, it's hard for anybody to hear criticism, of course. But we're going to try our best not to be defensive. And so if you have issues you want to talk about with us, please email, call, text, whatever. If you guys want to talk about that, what you just mentioned. Absolutely, I'd be happy to. So.
I didn't think about withdrawing a membership from somewhere else, to be honest. I just didn't even think of that, but maybe that's something.
Well, I mean, it depends on the denomination. I get various. I pastors sometimes put a lot of their self-worth into how many people come to their church, right? Mm-hmm. And so when someone just, I mean, not that you do this, but if anyone just leaves without saying why, you just say, I must be a horrible pastor. What did I do wrong? And sometimes it is my fault, but I'd like to at least know.
But it's,
you know,
very telling.
Yeah.
For somebody, I was in a leadership role and disappeared, and there wasn't any, like,
nobody came.
Where are
That's
you?
That's what I wanted to ask too.
Leave?
Does
where,
that
happen?
Can be fixed in the other way?
Yeah.
If you just withdraw, we're not going to be able to just leave, because that's going to be a pursued.
We do pursue. We do the pursuing. Yeah, we try. And if we, you know, sometimes this one guy, the most recent weird departure was somebody just sent me an email saying, it wasn't a long email, it was a one liner. Thank you. We've decided to move our membership to another church. Why? Can you tell me more? Nope.
what
do
you?
No, you can't tell. So.
What do you do with that?
Yeah, it's just, it's. It doesn't
and that
help.
Could have something not even to do with you.
It may not.
Like
I don't.
A,
but I don't
personal
know.
Personal relationship within the church, or
yeah,
their kids, or yeah. But
I just,
yeah.
I need to know. I need to know. I mean,
yeah,
I need to be able to
today.
Hear.
It's
so.
Got
to
be allergies. Right?
Allergies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just allergies. Something hit me today too.
Oh, I'm sorry. We should let you go down.
Let's
pray. let's pray, and then we'll close out here. Father, thank you that you have brought us all here this afternoon. I pray that you help us as we discern the way forward, and I pray they all become members, but that it's up to you. And I pray that you will help them make that decision. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, now that starts a question for me, because I didn't withdraw my membership, and I was in a leadership position, but there was this, it was a Nazarene.
Uh-huh,
okay. So we had this, you had to be a member to vote.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're voting for the new pastor, and they handed out blue ballots to everybody for members, right? If you're a member, then they handed out pink ballots, but he's not in that. A member, because you get to vote for the pastor too.
Oh wow!
Only here's a pink ballot, and we want to hear from all the non-members in here.
How did that
so
work?
So why would you? Why would anybody be a member?
Right. No, it just
right?
makes sense. Yeah. yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
door.
Yeah. I mean, who knows who got the pink ballots? It could be non-believers. It could be like. It could
right.
be, I mean,
and
yeah.
So it was like. So would I bother to? No.
I mean,
would you bother to say?
Is it a big church? How big is the church?
Pretty big.
Okay.
50, 400 people.
You might send a note, say, listen, I moved on to a different church.
Nobody really cared that I left, but.
Yeah. Thank you for all the good things you've poured in my life over the years. Here's why I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I don't agree. I think this is the wrong way to do.
Yeah, I guess
choose membership and but thank you. You yes. be kind. Yeah, you could say yeah, but yeah. You might say that just to give the pastor some idea why. I mean, if you have 350 people.
He's the guy
people,
that got voted on. So he's
Okay. All right.
Ones where like I'm not gonna really take these seriously, but we would like to hear why everyone's.
I mean, that's kind of different.
Count, really.
Ballot.
We're just giving you a voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So great. To clarify, I don't have an email. That takes care of everything.
Yes, are you?
Okay. Okay.
Glad to have you on board. Really happy.
So when I'm going to sell Melaleuca now. Actually, I'm very allergic to tea tree oil, so I can't.
Is Melaleuca tea? Is it tree oil?
Tea tree oil, yes.
I didn't know that.
Okay,
okay.
I know, right?
I went through that with